This chapter was taken from the Food and Feelings Workbook, written by Karen R. Koenig. Chapter 13, titled Triggers to Intense Feelings and Disordered Eating. Triggers to Intense Feelings and Disordered Eating. Don't they come with safety locks? If you love a good mystery, this chapter's for you. It'll help you figure out why you shift into food mode when you're hit with the tidal wave of emotion and what to do about it. You know the behaviors, wearing yourself on the hour, doing a calorie count instead of your taxes, polishing off the desserts you plan to serve for your dinner guests, or hanging out near your colleague's candy bowl when you're bored at work. If any of these mini mysteries sound familiar, it's time to don your Sherlock Holmes cap and discover what triggers you. A bit of sleuthing may be required, but once you've identified and colored the usual suspects, you stop yourself from getting robbed of your feelings in the future. What is an emotional trigger? Emotional triggers are external and internal stimuli that automatically activate a reaction within you. That is, they cause affective distress. Triggers may be people or events, a call from your elderly mother berating you for not visiting often enough, or bumping into an ex-colleague who received the promotion you wanted. They also could be memories or thoughts about the future, called projections, that act like tripwires. Recollections of the child you lost to cancer, or angst about your upcoming salary review. Think of your emotions as firecrackers. You're in no danger as long as you don't ignite. That is, get triggered. No matter how many firecrackers are stacked against you, even dozens, you're safe as long as you don't strike a match. But the instant a flame lights one of your fuses, bam, instant 4th of July. When you find yourself triggered and are uncomfortable with your emotions, which happens to all of us from time to time, you may act out in various ways, including the food arena, as a distraction from distress, planning your next diet, rushing off to exercise, or heading towards the refrigerator. This domino effect happens so fast that you might miss the trigger that sets you off, as well as your emotional response, and may only return to earth when you're exhausted from your workout or have finished the last donut in the box. Here's how the triggering dynamic works. First, you have the trigger, which leads to the emotion, which then leads to the food and weight related response. Here's an example. Trigger, call from your mother. Emotion, helplessness or guilt. And then your response, eating half a box of cereal. Now, here's another example, which is an internal trigger or projection. The trigger would be thinking about your work review, the emotion, anxiety, which leads to readjust scale, taking off your clothes and weighing yourself. And then here's a final example, which is an internal trigger based on a memory. The memory is a dead child's birthday, and the emotional response to that is grief. So what the response is calculating how much you've overeaten today and plan a low-calorie menu for tomorrow. Emotional triggers vary in intensity and visibility. Some are blatantly apparent, while others hover at the edge of awareness. Some set you off every time you encounter them, others press your buttons only when you're vulnerable and stressed. Some hit you head-on, others sneak up from behind. It's impossible to live a full life without running into emotional triggers. Because you're not made of Teflon, the best you can do is try to avoid the obvious ones, know what heats you up, and learn how to cool yourself down. So let's do a practice exercise. Emotional Triggers, Part 1. The purpose is to identify your emotional triggers. And the rationale is that the more skilled you are at identifying triggers, the better your chance of not overeating, overreacting, or of catching yourself before you do major damage. Here's what you do. Using the following columns in the handout provided, recall the last time you acted out with food and write the emotional reaction you were trying to minimize or avoid. Backtracking, then identify whether an external event or person, an internal thought or memory activated your feelings. Keep generating triggers and repeating the process until you recognize common activators and what emotions they stir up. Once again, you're going to be writing your emotional reaction, external trigger, internal trigger anticipation, an internal trigger memory. You can pause the recording now to do this. Now that you've completed the exercise, let's reflect. Are your triggers primarily internal or external? Are they memories or projections about the future? You may have a variety of emotional responses or only one or two. If you weren't able to identify at least a half dozen triggers, return to the exercise and keep going until you can. You can pause now to reflect on the lines provided on the handout. Now let's move on to part two of the practice exercise, acting out emotions through food. The purpose is to identify what emotions provoke acting out around food and why. The rationale is that after you've identified your triggers and the emotions they set off, you need to understand why you respond by acting out with food and which particular emotions drive you to do it. So here's what you do. Using the emotional reactions above, make a list of those that drive you to focusing on food. And then in the next column, write a food-related behavior you use to avoid an or lessen emotional intensity, counting fat grams, eating frozen Snickers bars, jumping on the scale, doing 100 sit-ups, staring at your naked body in the mirror, foraging in food cabinets or the refrigerator, etc. In the last column, write your rationale for keeping your distance from the emotion. For example, I feel overwhelmed. It makes me feel so alone. I'll get depressed. It hurts too much. I hate to cry. What's the point of dwelling on pain? For an example, your emotion might be loneliness. Your acting out could be trying on your skinniest clothes to cheer yourself up, and your rationale may be that you're afraid to get depressed if you let yourself feel lonely. So you can pause the recording now to fill out the chart on the handout provided. Now that we've finished part two, let's reflect. Understanding what causes you to sidestep your emotions is vital, so make sure you think long and hard about your rationales. Do you have just one, or do you have many? Are they rational or irrational? And what can you do to challenge the irrational ones? You can pause now to reflect on the lines provided. What factors affect my ability to handle emotional triggers? You now know that our basic motivation in life is to move towards pleasure and away from pain. Consequently, we're all generally drawn to and upset by similar circumstances. No one, at least if they're mentally healthy, enjoys being yelled at, getting physically hurt, failing, or losing a loved one. Most of us have visceral negative reactions to rejection, abandonment, grief, and humiliation. However, due to culture, biology, family, and individual experience, we also have a wide variety of expectations and tolerance for distress. Things that drive me crazy might not bother you, while something that has you climbing the walls might hardly ruffle my feathers. Expectations. Your response to emotional triggers depends, to some extent, on what you expect in life. If you accept that life has ups and downs and feel confident that you'll be able to weather through rough seas, you won't be as roiled by upsetting circumstances as someone who believes that things magically should and must always work out for them. If you don't want to be ambushed by emotional triggers, you have to acknowledge that they're out there lying in wait. Recognizing that we all have roadblocks, detours, hills, and valleys in our life journey will go a long way toward keeping your feet planted firmly on the ground and moving forward. Sticking your head in the sand and pretending that life should be easy, fair, and just will nearly always leave you in shock and off balance when you hit a bump in the road. Previous experiences. The nature and extent of previous hurtful experiences also affects your ability to manage emotional triggers. If you've endured a lifetime of suffering, you may be extremely sensitive, or you may wrongly believe that you're so tough you can handle anything. If you were neglected, abused, or endured trauma as a child, each present-day situation that is similar to your previous suffering may act as an emotional trigger, especially if your wounds haven't healed or if you're unaware of the damage they've caused. But coming to terms with your mistreatment or trauma, you'll learn what kinds of situations and interactions will set you off, and then either avoid them or put extra effort into dealing with them effectively. General circumstances. Naturally, your current circumstances are a partial predictor of how you'll react to triggers. If life is rolling along and your stress level is low to moderate, you may encounter one and be able to ignore or deactivate it fairly easily. You may even think, well, into every life a little rain must fall, and be on your merry way. However, if you're going through an ultra-stressful period and are already in over your head, a trigger may be the straw that breaks your emotional back. Current emotional state. Lastly, how you're feeling in the moment that you're triggered makes a big difference. If you're tense and jumpy or feeling hopeless, you'll probably have a negative reaction. Something that's not normally a trigger might even escalate into one. However, if you encounter one when you're feeling especially upbeat, even if you're not all that pleased with life in general, it may barely register. Due to your current happiness, something that would normally spark a reaction might barely turn your head. Stop and feel. What's emotionally triggering you right now? You can pause the recording now to reflect on this. Practice exercise. Trigger vulnerability predictor. The purpose of this exercise is to recognize factors that increase vulnerability to emotional triggering. And the rationale is that the better you are at recognizing what factors affect your vulnerability, the greater the chance that you can intervene and deactivate the trigger. So what you're going to do is answer the following questions on the handout provided. You can pause after I ask each question to do so. 1. Are your expectations of life realistic or magical? 2. How do past trauma and/or mistreatment affect your inner world today? 3. In general, what is your satisfaction level with your life? 4. What's your usual temperament? 5. Now that we've done the exercise, let's reflect some more. What factors make you vulnerable to triggers? What can you do to strengthen yourself in each area? For example, revamp your expectations to make them more realistic, take an anger management class, find a therapist to help with past trauma, maybe make a major life change which will decrease your stress. You can take some time now to pause and reflect on these questions. Can I overreact to triggers? Sometimes you may overreact because of a feeling surge so powerful that it blows your circumstances out of proportion. Here are some over-the-top reactions. Hearing about a party you weren't invited to and staying in bed all day. Fuming for hours after a silly quarrel with your grocery clerk. Or refusing to speak to your grandmother because she called you a day late to wish you happy birthday. Although it feels authentic and justified in the moment, these responses are overblown. Rest assured, everyone reacts this way every once in a while. Other times, however, when you think you're overreacting, you actually might not be. If you were taught in childhood to stifle your feelings and to always keep a smile on your face and a song in your heart, displaying any negative emotion might feel excessive and scary when, in fact, your response is perfectly normal and natural. In this case, you're not overreacting at all, but have a misguided belief that experiencing or expressing stronger emotions is wrong. 3 specific types of interactions, which are usually unconscious, often trigger intense emotional or overreactions. They are mental processes that occur deep in your psyche and are not readily apparent unless you're looking for them. To react appropriately when these dynamics occur, you need to become more conscious of when you're the initiator and recipient of them. Once you get the hang of spotting them in yourself and in others, you'll have an easier time diffusing them in an effective, appropriate manner. Moreover, these dynamics are exactly the ones that lead to such overpowering reactions that we feel we can't bear them and run off to abuse food instead. Note that most of what's going on in these interactions is unconscious, out of your awareness, off camera. However, just because you can't recognize the dynamics doesn't mean that they're not happening or affecting you. So let's take a closer look at each one. Active and passive projection. The first unconscious trigger of intense emotions is projection, of which there are two kinds, passive and active. Passive projection occurs when another person isn't aware of a feeling that, if felt, would cause discomfort, and you pick up on it instead. Active projection happens when another person casts off an uncomfortable feeling, sends it your way, and you take hold of it or internalize it as if it belonged to you. Using a useful metaphor to explain these complicated dynamics is that in passive projection, someone drops a ball that you pick up. In active projection, someone throws it at you and you catch it. Here's how passive projection works. Say you're on an airplane and notice a man leaving the lavatory and walking down the aisle clueless about the trail of toilet paper stuck to his shoe. If you're like me, the first reaction is to cringe. Why, you might ask, would you cringe when the toilet paper is on his loafer? Because you feel the shame you assume he'd feel if he knew the toilet paper was following him down the aisle. Not that there's anything inherently shameful about having toilet paper on one shoe. In fact, the moment he looks down and notices the paper, you'll probably feel a wave of relief because he'll now feel the discomfort himself and remove it. In this case, since the man is a stranger, it's likely that your discomfort would be transitory and mild. However, if it's your husband walking down a stage to make a presentation with toilet paper streaming off of his shoe, my guess is that you'd feel a good deal more shame, though it still doesn't belong to you. In fact, you might be similarly distressed if anyone close to you behaves shamefully. For example, if your brother has an addiction but is in denial or refuses to deal with it, you may feel ashamed for him when he does outlandish things. Unfortunately, you are experiencing the discomfort he's out of touch with and needs to feel in order to stop acting like a fool. Although the discomfort feels enormously strong and as if it's its own, remember that the disgraceful actions of another person are not a cause for you to be ashamed. The feeling belongs to the individual acting badly. You need only to feel shame about what you have done by your own free will. When you experience another person's discomfort because they don't or won't feel it, you need to let go of the feeling so that you're not carrying around someone else's baggage. We all have enough of our own to schlep through life. Now let's take a look at active projection, which occurs when a person unconsciously disowns a feeling with which he or she is uncomfortable, or would be if it was felt, and lays it on you instead. As with passive projection, it's unlikely that the person is aware that they're foisting their feelings onto you. The difference is that in active projection, the person is putting intention and effort, though unconscious, into avoiding emotional discomfort by sticking it on you, whereas in passive projection, you're merely picking up on what they're ignoring. To project is to throw out something, and in the case of active projection, the phrase has a dual meaning, both to divest the self of something and to thrust it as far away as possible. When someone actively projects a negative emotion onto you, it's because they're so uncomfortable with it, or would be if they allowed themselves to feel it, that they need to get rid of it post-haste. They do this by attributing the uncomfortable feeling to you and then disliking or hating it in you rather than in themselves. Think of the game of hot potato. When the potato is too hot to handle, it gets tossed to someone else. Remember, just because someone assigns a negative quality to you doesn't mean that it is or is not there. That's for you to decide. An illustration of active projection is when your spouse has a thing about being right but denies it. In an argument, he or she insists, you always have to have the last word, you always think you're right. If you can honestly look at yourself and say you're not someone who much cares about being right or wrong, then you have no reason to buy into the accusation. The zing of discomfort you feel belongs to your spouse who refuses to acknowledge hating to be wrong. How much easier to make you the fall guy for bad behavior. The only healthy antidote for projection is to know yourself inside and out. If you're completely objective and honest, you'll be able to distinguish your faults from what other people blame you for and impartially evaluate their accusations. Of course, if you always automatically assume that you're mistaken or wrong, it won't be easy to deflect projections. Remember, if the feeling doesn't belong to you, let it go. Transference reaction. The second unconscious process that may get you going is called a transference reaction. It occurs when you're in a situation that's highly similar to one you've repeatedly experienced before, most often with your parents or other significant people in your childhood. Transference happens when, although you're well aware that you're in the present, your emotional system reacts as if you're in the past. For instance, say your board chair calls and says she wants to talk to you about an upcoming meeting, but instead starts unloading her personal problems on you. After 15 minutes of complaining, you or anyone might start feeling uneasy. Now imagine that you had a mother who was emotionally immature, used poor judgment, and inappropriately confided in you as if you were her best friend. As a young child, of course you felt inadequate to take care of her or solve her problems. However, you may also have felt proud or honored that she turned to you in distress, as well as terrified that she'd fall apart or that you'd let her down. Now, in your current conversation with your board chair, you may re-experience the same feelings that you had with your mother, deja vu, all over again. Can you see the parallel? Instead of reacting as an adult and simply explaining that you have to get off the phone, you react as if you're a child and she's your mother. You may feel overwhelmed, enraged, invisible, incompetent, inadequate, paralyzed, or want desperately to fix her problems, whatever mix of emotions you felt with your mother when she expected you to listen and maybe even solve her problems. In essence, you're transferring the feelings you had and still possibly have about your mother onto the board chair. You're caught in a transference reaction when you're infuriated that your boss dismisses all your suggestions, just as you were as a child when your father systematically ignored your opinions. When you swallow your fury and clean up your irresponsible teenager's messes, the way you did for your siblings while your alcoholic mother laid passed out on the couch, when you fear making things worse by challenging your control freak spouse because you got kicked around as a child every time you talked back to your parents. When you feel painfully left out because two friends mentioned going shopping together, which is exactly how you felt growing up when your twin sisters ran off hand in hand to do something without you. To repeat, you're probably caught in a transference reaction when your response in the here and now is overblown or excessive to circumstance. The vulnerability and hurt you experience is not really about the present. It's about unhealed wounds from the past. This doesn't mean that you shouldn't have feelings about the current situation or person. It merely signals that the intensity of your reaction belongs to something that happened long ago. The only way to counter a transference reaction is to closely observe when your feelings are out of proportion to a situation and reel yourself back from the past to the present. Remind yourself that you're an adult now, with lots of emotional and cognitive options, that you don't have to stew in a rage or feel paralyzed to someone else's bidding or stand for being humiliated. You can speak up, walk away, or not take things personally, all of which you were unable to do growing up. Recognizing transference triggers is a huge asset to maintaining emotional equilibrium. Beware of these common triggers. If you had a childhood full of neglect and felt invisible most of the time, when you feel unseen and unheard today, you're likely to react. If you were under constant scrutiny growing up with minimal opportunity for self-sufficiency and autonomy, you'll probably have trouble being micromanaged today. You might also overreact if, as a child, you had excessive pressure to excel or behave perfectly, were severely restricted and are harshly punished for minor infractions, witnessed abuse, or lived in a constant state of fear. Repetition of the past. The third type of circumstance that can lead to an intense reaction is when you experience a repetition of painful situations or interactions that occurred in the past. For instance, if you suffered a great deal of loss, again, especially as a child, you may have an exceptionally tough time dealing with loss now. Remember, every loss contains reverberations of each previous loss. So for you to lose a sister to breast cancer at age 50 after losing your husband in your 40s and a best friend last year means your experience may be more charged than that of someone who has never had a soul close to them die. There's really no way around this kind of cumulative reaction, no matter how strong it is, other than acknowledging it. If you've endured a lot, you're carrying with you all of your grievances and wounds of the past, and each new hurt will remind you of old ones. You feel what you feel, and that's that. The most important thing is to not judge yourself for having a more intense reaction than someone else. If they had lived your life, they might respond exactly the same way. Stop and feel. What are you feeling right now? You can pause the recording now to reflect on this. Practice exercise. Rescripting. The purpose of this exercise is to develop effective ways of reacting to triggers. The rationale is that it's hard to change your behavior without understanding its causes and underlying dynamics. By becoming conscious of what's going on, you can make your responses more appropriate. So here's what you do. Think of a troubling situation that involves a transference reaction, repetition of previous wounding or trauma, or internalizing someone's negative projections. Play out the scene in your head, including the usual reaction. Then, replay the scene with a different ending or reaction. For example, if you usually remain silent when your boss criticizes you just like your father did, a transference reaction, imagine speaking up. Or if you generally respond with vitriol and sarcasm, picture yourself saying nothing and walk away. You can pause the recording now to do this on the lines provided. First, you'll be writing the current situation and the reaction, and then you'll be writing the usual reaction, followed by the new reaction. Now that you've done the exercise, let's reflect. Were you able to put a different spin on each triggering scenario? What got in the way of changing your behavior? If you want to avoid getting triggered, practice re-scripting every troubling circumstance, either beforehand to interact differently or afterwards to determine how to do better next time. You can pause now to reflect. How can I stop acting out with food in response to emotional triggers? Triggers will continue to lead to knee-jerk, destructive impulses around food unless you tackle the problem from multiple angles and make different decisions at specific choice points. You will need to stay focused on three areas simultaneously to achieve success: changing your beliefs about triggers, food, and emotions, learning how to identify and handling your feelings effectively, and eliminating acting out with food by developing new self-care strategies. Let's run through your options using an example of external, ongoing trigger to see what you can do to change the outcome of a situation. Say every week you spend time with Uncle Charlie, who's been a bit of a grouch now, but who was a favorite of yours in childhood. You feel badly for him, yet come away from each visit vowing it'll be your last and fuming with hostility, resentment that he's eating up your precious leisure hours, anger that all he does is complain, disappointment that he rarely expresses any interest in your life, and helpless that you can't get out of what you feel is your duty. It never fails. You're barely out of the door of Charlie's nursing home room, and you're obsessing about food. Changing your beliefs. The first thing you could do to change the outcome of your visit is to alter your thoughts about Charlie and your duty towards him so that you won't feel triggered. Rather than feeling guilty about considering skipping a weekly visit, you could decide that seeing him every other week is perfectly acceptable and fair. Or you could stop thinking of him as a burden and remind yourself of all the kind things he did for you when you were a child. You could focus your thoughts on how good visits are for him, not on how bad they are for you, or markedly reduce what you expect of him. All these are ways of changing your beliefs, which then alter your feelings and ultimately impacts your need to act out with food. You might also want to reframe your beliefs about how you expect to react. If you tell your sister, "Every time I visit Uncle Charlie, I'm disappointed," you're programming yourself for, guess what, being let down. Change your beliefs about your emotions and you'll actually feel differently. Tell yourself that when you leave him, you'll feel proud, calm, compassionate, or even that you won't feel much of anything. By deciding what you want to feel about the visit, you can gently push away from other unwanted feelings. Finally, you can address the beliefs that underlie acting out with food. Again, if as you're saying goodbye to Charlie, you think, I have to have a piece of chocolate cake, or I'm so fat, I'd better throw out all those cashews, or I'll eat them all, you're setting yourself on a path of destruction. Even if you're upset when you arrive home, you can have a set of beliefs that says you don't need to focus on food because you can take care of yourself just fine without it. Think, if there was no such thing in the world as food, what would I do then? Make sure that the tape running in your head is healthy and behavior and your behaviors will follow. Practice exercise. Reframing triggering beliefs. The purpose of this exercise is to reframe your beliefs in order to decrease triggering. And the rationale is that when you think differently, you can't help but feel and act differently. Here's what you do. Choose a situation or a person that triggers distressing feelings and destructive eating. Now, on the lines provided, list your current beliefs about a situation that triggers you to act out with food. For example, Uncle Charlie's beliefs might include seeing him as a drag. I have better things to do with my time. I'm bummed he doesn't care about me. I can't help but leave there mad. I'm too upset when I go home to do anything fun. Hanging out with him makes me feel like I want to hurt myself. If I focus on food, I'll calm down. Then, reframe all of the irrational beliefs about your situation and make them rational. You can pause the recording now to do this. Now that you've done the exercise, let's reflect. Was it harder to identify or reframe your irrational beliefs? Which new rational beliefs will give you the most payoff? Triggers, emotions, or responses? If you act out of these beliefs in the future, how will it change your life? You can pause to reflect on the lines provided. Handling feelings. Along with creating healthier beliefs, you can also work on handling your emotions differently. Returning to Uncle Charlie, you would first have to get under your initial responses of anger and resentment to understand the complexity of your reactions. Maybe you're frustrated and disappointed that he doesn't take any interest in you, but know how much your visits mean to him. Deep down, you feel hurt and unappreciated, and that's causing you anger. If you didn't believe that Charlie should be grateful for your time with him, you would visit him because you believe it's the right thing to do and leave feeling neutral or happy that you've been of service. Often, once you get to the root of your feelings, they not only relieve you of the need to act out with food, but help you to understand yourself and other people better. When negative feelings about Charlie surface, you can remind yourself that they're only temporary and will pass, or feel proud of doing more for your uncle than other family members do. You can laugh inwardly at his caricature behavior, be curious about how he became so grumpy, or have compassion for someone who is obviously bitter and unhappy. By changing your view of Charlie and your situation, you can't help but generate different, less discomforting feelings. Practice exercise. Regulating emotional reactions. The purpose of this exercise is to regulate your emotional responses to triggers. The rationale is that you can regulate your emotions by focusing attention on them to either increase or decrease their intensity. Here's what you do. Using the trigger situation or person you chose for the beliefs exercise, identify the painful emotions that generally cause you to act out with food. Some Uncle Charlie examples include resentment, hurt, frustration, disappointment, and feeling undervalued. Next, consider what you need to do with your feelings, whether that be connect more deeply because you generally push them away, or soothe them because you know all too well how painful they can be, to really take care of yourself. Some Uncle Charlie examples include pull out photos of you and Charlie long ago having fun and have a good cry, call your sister and complain, write your heart out in your journal, put your hand over your heart and send healing messages to yourself, ask your partner or a friend for a big hug. Make sure to identify all your emotions of the situation. You can pause the recording now to complete this exercise. Now that you've completed the exercise, let's take some time to reflect. Were you able to identify the emotions that trigger a food response? How did you do with either increasing or decreasing your affective reaction? And how will your new regulation strategies help you with your disordered eating? You can pause the recording at this time to reflect on this. Eliminating acting out with food. Even when you're unable to change your beliefs or handle your feelings effectively, you still have a third intervention point to prevent you from acting out through dysfunctional eating. The key is to make a decision that no matter what emotion you're experiencing, you refuse to use or abuse food to feel better. Any healthy behavior is fair game. The point is to choose to do something other than taking your feelings out on your appetite and your body. Although the ultimate goal is to experience all of your feelings, initially you may not be able to do that. If you can sit with how disappointed you are at Uncle Charlie or how much you miss your former self, fine. If not, you need to distance yourself from your emotions so that they don't overpower you and prompt you to do something unhealthy to your body and spirit. Possibly you don't have the skills yet to contain your feelings and have to distract yourself instead. Okay then, find some activity. Any behavior that isn't self-destructive to refocus you and buffer your emotions. Practice exercise. Stopping acting out with food. The purpose of this exercise is to avoid acting out with food in spite of intense emotional reaction. The rationale is you can train yourself not to abuse food by engaging in other distracting activities even when you're emotionally upset. So here's what you do. Continuing with your trigger situation, brainstorm the specific behaviors you can do to distract yourself from feelings and refocus your energies. Some Uncle Charlie examples include calling a friend, taking a nap, going for a walk, doing some chores, listening to a relaxing CD, or browsing on the computer. You can pause the recording now to do this. Now that you've done the exercise, let's take some time to reflect. Could you think of enough distractions? What got in the way of brainstorming activities? And what would prevent you from following through with your distractions? Lastly, even if you're unable to intervene in any of these ways and end up using or obsessing about food to make yourself feel better, you can always reflect on your behavior afterwards with some compassion and curiosity to learn from it. Chances are that next time you'll be able to make better choices, and if not then, the time after that. It doesn't matter at which point you intercede, the point is to break the pattern and do something differently. What else can I do to separate food and feeling? Scrutinizing your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors is tough work, but it's the only way to get from here to there. Because this is a book about food and feelings, you'll need to work through both ends of the process to reach your goal of using each appropriately. This means doing whatever is necessary to put each in good working order. Remember that the more successful you are in identifying and handling your emotions, the easier it will be to avoid acting out with food. Alternatively, the more effective you are in disengaging from unhealthy eating, the more chance your emotions will have to blossom and guide you towards authentic happiness. You've probably figured out by now that transforming your emotional world means trying on a lot of new behaviors. If you careen wildly through life, zooming from one crisis to another without stopping to examine what you feel, you'll have to slow down, digging deep in order to connect to your inner world, understand what your emotions mean to your life, and consider how they impact your relationship with food. Why not spend a few minutes at the end of each day recalling what emotions you experienced or writing them down in a journal? This activity is an excellent substitute for a day's end calorie count, a self-trashing for overeating, or a midnight snack. Conversely, if you believe that every waking moment must be brimming with passion or heartache, you'll need to learn how to modulate emotions so that they don't overpower and rule you. Intense emotions can certainly make you feel alive, but they don't need to be complemented with good judgment, but they need to be complemented with good judgment and clear thinking. Your work is to get your head in gear and give your heart a rest. Once you're in better balance, it'll be easier to curtail food-related behaviors that hurt you and expand self-care activities that heal you. Lastly, if you're generally angry, anxious, or defensive, basically an unhappy person, you're setting yourself up to fail at breaking the food feelings bond. It's one thing to have moments of upset and angst, and quite another to suffer from chronic dissatisfaction or melancholy. All someone needs to do is scratch your emotional surface, and you're bound to fly off the handle or plunge into despair. Until you realize that your view of the world acts like a magnet to emotional pain, you'll continue to suffer. Moreover, your negative reactions are bound to be so intense that they overshadow your best intentions to change your relationship with food. Many chronic emotional states or conditions make it difficult to be a happy, productive member of society, as well as prevent you from functional eating. Perhaps you're depressed, suffer from an anxiety disorder, or haven't healed from a long ago or recent trauma. Unless you deal with what's causing your emotional blockages and ruptures, you won't be able to heal your pain or maintain healthy eating habits. What keeps you from exploring the roots of your unhappiness? What prevents you from getting the help you need to become the person that you want and deserve to be? If you can't figure out why you're a walking time bomb, a well of loneliness, or a hive of anxiety, you can read self-help books on emotional health and trauma. Keep a journal of your emotions to help you keep track and understand them. Share your feelings with understanding, compassionate friends, or take a workshop on how to be more assertive or how to relax with yoga. Last but not least, if you've done all of the above and are still unable to change, you can seek out professional help too. Stop and feel. What feelings stop you from getting the help you need to improve your life and repair your relationship with food? You can pause now to reflect on this question. Most of the strategies I've given you for handling emotions and eating more sanely focus on making internal adjustments, but another avenue for transformation also exists. Rather than changing yourself, you can change your environment. Allowing yourself to remain in chronically stressful situations is nothing less than unhealthy and will make it nearly impossible to end your self-destructive reactions to food and weight. If you're sick and getting tired of going out to lunch with friends who constantly talk about dieting and losing weight or who complain and are going nowhere in life, it's time to find some new buddies. If every time you visit your son and daughter-in-law, they expect you to join them in cleaning the house, you'll need to find a new venue for getting together. If work is stressing you out because you're doing the job of two people and your boss refuses to hire additional help, maybe you need to find work that's doable and brings you pleasure. If you're miserable in an abusive relationship, read the writing on the wall, gather your courage, get some help, and walk away. Recognizing your emotional and eating triggers and changing your responses is challenging work. Triggers, however, are nothing more than buttons that get pushed when you think you can't help yourself. Maybe you've been telling yourself you can't for a long, long time, or maybe you've wanted to change but don't know how. Keep focused on all three tracks: transforming unhealthy beliefs, coming to terms with your feelings, and monitoring your behavior around food. Your triggers will gradually move from the forefront to the background of your life. Not only that, you'll increase your confidence and self-trust and start to experience the pure joy that comes from making peace with food and taking care of yourself with consideration and compassion. Further exploration. Take some time to pause the recording and answer after I ask each question. 1. Are you easily triggered to anger, fear, hurt, or disappointment? 2. What are your major triggers, people and situations? 3. What are the most difficult emotions for you to bear? Anger, anxiety, self-doubt, disappointment, helplessness, and why? 4. How can you alter your circumstances, that is, your environment, to be triggered less often and/or less intensely? 5. What relationships do you need to change to be triggered less often? 6. What are your expectations about being able to diffuse triggers and prevent acting out with food? 7. Are there any unhealthy behaviors besides eating that you're worried you'll engage in if you no longer abuse food? Finally, 8. What is the biggest obstacle for you to overcome so that you won't be triggered to act out with food? This completes this chapter of the reading. Feel free to review the materials as needed. Thank you for listening.